Good Monday evening to everybody. This is your host, Charles Levi, also known as Redfish Chuck. Welcome to what should turn out to be a fairly interesting and exciting conversation on this glorious Monday evening. Joining me, as always, is my trusty sidekick, Rob DeVore. How are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm good, man. I'm good. Just editing a video right now.
Good deal. Good deal.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing well.
Awesome.
I had an interesting weekend that we'll get into a little bit later on. And, you know, we got a lot of cool things to talk about today on the show.
Yes, sir.
So let's go ahead and dive right in, shall we? Whoa.
Sorry. My video editing. My bad.
No problem. It's cool, buddy.
I'll try to keep it down.
That's all right. I know the sky is pretty loud. So, let's see. First of all, I'd like to congratulate Steve Gibson of Shallow Pockets Guide Service.
Oh, he won?
For his big redfish win.
Nice.
He brought in the biggest redfish of this past weekend's Indian River Paddle Classic. I believe he won a pretty nice rod and reel combo, and he also got a nice little trophy and some other goodies. So that was cool. And so I got to formally meet him. I've talked to him a bunch of times on Facebook and whatnot, and never really face to face, so that was cool. We kind of hung out in the parking lot of Strike Zone Fishing down there in Melbourne, like a bunch of homeless people outside the place when they closed. We're kind of loitering around drinking cold beers, so that was interesting. Excuse me. But so that was the big to do for this weekend for me, was the Indian River Paddle Classic. I had a great time fishing with Miss D. Kaminsky, as I always do, and my buddy Scott, who joined us as well. And like I said, I'm going to try and save that for a little bit later on in the show. I got a few other things I want to try and get to before we get to that. So let me see here, guys. Check out yakangler.com. Your ultimate kayak fishing resource. It's one of those places where you can go. It's free to join, get involved with the kayak fishing community. There's guys on kayak fishing. On yakangler.com from all over the world, and it's a really cool place to just kind of learn a few things and maybe lend some knowledge to other kayak anglers as well. So. I'm so lost. I forgot my first thing I was going to talk about. Rob, did you fish this? Well, I know you fished this weekend. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your adventure that you had there?
Oh, man. Had a great trip, great night, or a great day yesterday on the flats. The big trout are back. Had at least five keepers and five big ones. Between 20 and 25. Now, before you get all up in an uproar and you go, well, heck, day catches 34-inch trout. Well, they don't get that big very often over here on this coast. So a 20 to 25-inch trout is a good one, man. So I was really surprised because picked up a couple of keepers first thing, and then I was, like, ready for Dink City. And didn't really... run into the dinks until later, and I'm really surprised because usually you catch, you know, when you do catch a big trout like that, it's usually on its own, you know, and was within the same probably 75 foot radius, and I caught five of them, you know, big ones. So that was good. And tell me if you've ever heard this before, a 25 inch ladyfish on top water.
That's a big ladyfish.
Yeah, I couldn't. I thought it was a tarpon at first, man. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, that's a big ladyfish.
It was big, man. But you'll never know it because of my my video footage. I came home and I was all excited because I had a pretty good day. Keith caught a 3-foot. Keith didn't catch one fish in the kayak yesterday. Thunderstorms forced us over on an island, and then in between thunderstorms, we were kind of going out, and as we were huddled under palmetto branches, which are, by the way, are great rain cover, just so you know, if you're ever in survival mode. But those are awesome rain cover. Just make sure you don't pick the ones with wasp nests under them, because those usually, so anyway, you know, in between thunderstorms, you know, we were just too far away from our put-in to be able to chance going back and, you know, lightning and all that stuff. So we just kind of hung around the island for a little while, and he didn't catch one fish in the kayak yesterday. It was all waiting, you know. And with Keith, you know, if he catches a dink trout, he's happy. But he picked up a 3-foot bonnethead shark yesterday that just about spooled him, man, put a stratic through the paces. And we had a great time yesterday, man. Got some good video footage of that. That was pretty funny. We're doing the shark dance in about knee-deep water, you know, trying to get control of this little shark, you know.
That's funny.
It was hilarious, man. I'm putting together the video blog. So if anybody, just I'm putting this out there, if you need any HD video of the sky, let me know. I can hook you up.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to bust your butt on that one too bad, buddy. It happens to all of us that are new to the GoPro, so it just happens. But well, that's cool, man. That's one thing I wanted to talk about a little bit tonight is that I was really, really surprised by the number of sharks that I saw this weekend. I've seen a few of them in the river. Well, I've seen a bunch of them in the river before, but I've never seen them on the flats in the numbers that I saw them this past weekend. Excuse me. We saw some bonnet heads, big bonnet heads, 3 and 4 foot long bonnet heads, and which I didn't realize they ever even got that big, and some black tips and possibly a couple small bull sharks. They were kind of hard to tell because they zoom by you so quick. But all in like 12 to 18 inches of water, just cruising around, destroying mullet pods. And I mean, it was really cool. I saw the biggest snook I've ever seen in my entire life down there as well. And down there is around the Sebastian Inlet area, for those that are listening on the East Coast, just north of the Sebastian Inlet on the east side of the river. So it was pretty cool. Well, let's just talk about that weekend. Why wait? Let's just dive right on into it. So Friday night was the captain's meeting for the Indian River Paddle Classic down at Strike Zone of Melbourne. For those of you that have never been to Strike Zone of Melbourne, take a chance and ride down there, or take your time, sorry, ride down there and take a gander around and see what all's there. Sean and those guys down there run a pretty tight ship. If he doesn't have it in his shop, chances are you probably don't need it. Great guys, and definitely, you know, show those guys some support. But don't forget about Handler Fishing Supply out of Port Canaveral. So we went there, me and my buddy Scott, and I thought the captain's meeting started at 7. It actually started at 6:30, so I missed out on all the good raffles and things like that, which, you know, it's one of the main reasons why people like to go to captain's meetings. And here we go. Exactly. So, heard some of the rules and got, you know, kind of filled in on the ones that I missed, and got to talking to a couple of guys that I know from yakangler.com and from, Facebook and stuff, some of the other kayakers. So it was cool to kind of put faces to names and things like that. And then we decided to call it an early evening and head back home to get ready to go for the next morning for the tournament. We went down, met D down at Long Point, bait and tackle at O-Dark 30. What do you call it, Rob? Ugly early. That's what it is. So, we met her down there at Ugly Early and went and launched and paddled out to her first location. And you could tell we were in the right spot, man. There was mullet getting busted everywhere, and there was a lot of activity, a lot of bait movement. You can tell that the water was up a little bit. It had seemed that that there might have been some more tidal influence than what I'm used to fishing. So we kind of got set up. I made a couple casts with the top water, missed the trout right off the bat, and kind of spread out a little bit. And then here they come. Here comes the sound that no angler, whether you be a kayak angler or a normal boat angler or even a wader, the sound that dolphins. Nobody wants to hear. No, no, worse than that, a whole group of other anglers heading right for your spot.
No.
All right. I'm not talking like two other kayak anglers. I'm talking like 8 to 10 other kayak anglers, all heading directly at us. So I don't know, man. I'm trying to figure out where I should go. I was just lost for words as I am right now, even thinking about it, because I'm thinking this is a big river, really. I'm going to have to contend with a dozen other boaters today. And then power boaters, you know, thrown into the mix because there's a bunch of them running around on their trolling motors and stuff. So a lot more boat traffic than I'm accustomed to having to fish around. But, you know, whatever. I just moved on and tried to find a different place to do what I do. So I get away from them for probably 20 minutes, and here they come again. And now it's progressed from little mumblings and, hey, you know, dad, look over there. Hey, guys, look over here. You know, look at that bird. You know, we're out here fishing. We're not out here looking at birds and dolphins and porpoises and whatever else. To now it has become full-fledged yelling from one kayaker to another, banging of all kinds of tools and stuff inside their kayaks and dropping of anchors, like literally dropping anchors in the water, you know, the whole let's make as much noise as we possibly can to fish this, you know, foot and a half worth of water that we're in. Kind of.
And they were in the tournament?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, me not knowing the area, the landscape too terribly well, I just kind of kept pushing along up along the mangroves and kind of trying to stay away. And, it didn't work out very well. The further that I went, the more they followed, and it was kind of like a game of cat and mouse all day long. Everywhere that me, Dee, and Scott would go, this large group of kayakers would follow in right behind us. And I finally thought we had lost them. They finally kind of like snuck in past us a little bit, and you know, we fished this flat for a while. Got up on this spot where Dee had caught some really nice fish a couple trips prior, and there's a whole bunch of mullet everywhere, and, you know, ran across a couple sharks just cruising around. It was pretty cool to see them. And I don't know, what we were there for probably, 45 minutes or so, and the bite had kind of slowed down. And when the bite slowed down, we were contemplating where we were going to go next. And I think Dee had said, let's kind of move on out here in a little bit deeper water and see if we can't get some bigger trout or something. And no sooner did we do that here comes the group again. Come on back, you know, come on paddling back past us again and yelling, hey, I got a catfish. Hey, catfish. Hey, I got a stingray. It's like, yay, stingray. You know, I mean, come on. Am I the only person that has an issue with what the story, how the story is going so far? I mean, it should be commonplace etiquette when you're on the flats that if you see an angler fishing in a spot, you go, you do everything that you possibly can to go around that angler and give him his space. You can jump up ahead.
Absolutely.
Of you can jump up ahead of me. I have no problem with that. That's fine. It's a big river, right? And I don't own it. But if I'm at a spot first, I would expect the courtesy for somebody to go around me rather than fish on top of me or even fish within eyesight. Look, my general rule of thumb is this. I don't want to know the manufacturer of the kayak that you're sitting in. Okay. Unless you're my buddy and we launch together and that's the situation, or I know you and I'm calling you over to some fish or what have you, I really don't even want to be able to read the label on the side of your kayak. If I can tell what your shirt says, you're too close. I mean, is that unrealistic, Rob, or are you kind of the same
way? Not at all. I'm the same way, man. I think that that's fine. Now, if I'm with a buddy or something like that, and, you know, if my buddy is, you know, within 15 to 20 feet of me, that's good. Anything closer, if I'm not handing off something closer,
yeah,
then I don't want to, I don't, you know what I mean?
Right. No, I'm the same way. And it's like, it's understood that if you launch together and you're going to plan to fish around each other all day long today, or as some of us call surround and pound or whatever, and you find a big wad of fish and you kind of bounce the fish off each other and you work kind of as a team to kind of keep those fish near you. That's cool. That's fine. And it's an understanding that you go into. You go into the day having that understanding, knowing that that's what the plan is.
Well, for instance, like yesterday, you know, me and my buddy split up, okay? And I can see him like 3/4 of a mile away, you know, from me. And I want to be able to tell him that I'm on the fish, but I don't want to go, hey, you know, they're over here, because then they're going to bug out. You know, I try to be quiet. You know, yesterday it was a drift. You know, it was like a wind pushing you across the flat type thing, you know, so I'm not making any noise. And, you know, usually sometimes we get, like, our whistles out and we'll give, like, the magic whistle, you know. So, you know, so we can say, hey, you know, if he gets on fish or something, or if I get on fish, we'll just hit the magic, you know, we'll hit the whistle a couple of times and, you know, maybe get attention, you know, flag them down, something like that, you know. But, yeah, as a rule, I don't like fishing super close to people, you know, any day, you know, whether it's just, you know, me and my buddies going out or what.
Yeah, well, and I see Adam's talking about walkie-talkies, and walkie-talkies are definitely an acceptable means of staying in touch with each other.
Absolutely. Cell
yeah,
phone.
I'm not going to comment on what I'm hearing. I heard that Haywood had a run-in this weekend with kind of a similar situation. But, you know, if you feel like calling in, buddy, and talking about it, I'll be more than happy to hear it.
That's not me.
Who's that? 32154. Who's that?
D.
Hi, D.
But I didn't press any buttons. I've been listening to your story.
That's okay. Is my story accurate and correct?
Well, but yeah, but you didn't talk about the worst part of it. Probably the worst part of it is they actually got so close to us that we could have easily bashed them on the head with any lure. I mean, they were so close. What was it? 20 feet at one point.
Oh, no, they were way closer than that. They got there towards the end of the day when you and Scott came around that corner right before you hit that big snook.
Yeah.
They were up on us.
And I was so frustrated. I mean, I was swearing left and right. Chuck was just laughing. And I actually had to play like bumper pool with these kids because I had to, you know, like a football player, just had to get cut right in front of the kid so that he wouldn't get into any of Chuck's way. It was just, it's unimaginable. I've never heard of anything so bad. The etiquette of these people was like first time on the water. And I spoke with a buddy of mine who actually knows who these people are. He says, oh, well, the guy's a really nice guy. And I said, well, yeah, but he's not teaching his children any manners on fishing. So they're going to go out and their 9 kids are going to do this to however many other people the next time they go back out. I mean,
yeah, absolutely, that's wrong. That's just it. That's one of the main things that I want to definitely drill on this show tonight. And it is kind of the Rant and Rave Monday edition of the Monday Night Kickoff show.
Oh, no.
Kind of. It's not going to be all about that. I'm going to lighten up the mood here in a little bit. But I can't even express how, like, frustrating it is to know that you're in a fishy area, you know. You know there's fish there. You can see mullet showering up ahead of you, and you can see, you know, big busts out in the middle of these flats and things like that, and you know that those are good quality fish. And when you have the circus coming to town on the flats, it totally defeats the purpose of trying to be stealthy or even flats fishing at all. You know, for those of you that don't fish flats like we fish down here, I'll give you a little insight of what I'm talking about. We're fishing in most of the time, less than 2 foot of water, or 2 foot and less. The fish that we're targeting, these big trout, redfish, snook, tarpon, that kind of thing, black drum, are really highly pressured down here. There's a lot of boats on the water. There's a lot of kayakers on the water. So they're constantly being bombarded by topwater plugs and spoons and artificials and live baits and all of the things I like to call alien noises that they're not used to hearing. It's just something that it's just something that's, you know, one of those things that you should understand as a fisherman. It's like, for instance, I know a bunch of guys that are listening at home right now are hunters. Okay, now if you're going to go out in the woods to go turkey hunting, you know, and you take a buddy with you out turkey hunting, and you're sitting up against a tree, and you're all quiet, you're camouflaged from head to toe, you're being as stealthy as you can, which is the same thing we're doing on the flats, and you're calling that bird in, and you're calling that bird in, and you're calling that bird in, or in our case, you're searching for those fish, and you're searching for those fish, and you finally spot them, okay? And then your buddy decides to either yell at you, sneeze, start singing a song, it doesn't matter, just makes a bunch of racket, and the bird takes off flying. You're probably going to want to turn around and smack your buddy in the face. You know, at least I would. And that's kind of the same thing. It's like you work so hard all day long, you paddle, and you try to get to a spot where you know fish are. Or if you're in a boat, you're push-pulling and push-pulling, only to have a guy run up on you and spook all your fish, or a paddle or another kayaker come up and throw in on the school and land a bait in the center of the school. It spooks the school. It's just common courtesy. That's all it is. And it's common sense more than it is anything.
Well, it was completely disrespectful, rude. There was no etiquette. They were just like an army of bulldozers coming on top of you every hour upon the hour. It was awful. You couldn't get away from them worth anything. The only way would have been to go to some place that you knew didn't have fish.
Right.
You know.
Well, yeah, and basically we were getting pushed around the flat almost as if we were the fish, trying to find a place to go.
We were pushed off, yeah.
Yeah, we're trying to find a place to go to find fish that aren't going to be, you know, bombarded by what we were dealing with. I see Benita Bob asked the question, did anyone say anything? Well, here's the problem, okay? We've got what we were dealing with is we were dealing with a couple of adults and a bunch of kids. Okay, and I don't fault the kids for being loud. It's not their fault. They're kids. I've got kids. I understand. I've fished with kids before. I get it. Okay, but as an adult fishing in a fishing tournament, and I'm not sour grapes because I didn't win. Don't take it as that. This is not about that. This is about me just trying to kind of drive the point across that we all had to. Yeah, he had the answer. We all have to. You know, take our time on the water and kind of be a little bit more respectful of each other out there. And you know what? It happens all the time. It doesn't happen to this extent, but it happens all the time. It's one of the reasons why the Mosquito Lagoon up here in Titusville is one of the most loved and hated places to fish all at one time. Because God forbid you're out there on a weekend, because some of us have to fish on the weekends, can't always fish during a week. And you should just so happen to find a school of redfish and hook one. And the school picks up and takes off, and you know, you're Johnny on the spot trying to be, you know, right there. You're gonna try and be that guy to kind of corral that school by yourself if you can, to try and, you know, follow them or whatever techniques that you use to try and keep with that school of fish so that you can continue to catch fish all day long off the same pack. And then here comes, you know, two or three boats or two or three other kayakers, and they see that push of fish, and they come swarming on in on it, like, you know, they own the joint. And what guys all the time will say, it's not your water, but that's not the point. The point is that I worked hard today to find those fish. I'm pretty sure I've got a couple of my really good friends listening to the show tonight that are inshore guides, boat guides. And I know that I've had this conversation with them before where, you know, this happens to them on a daily basis. So it's not just me, it's not just them, it's everybody that fishes these waters. And it's killing us. It's really tough to try and deal with that every single day. Captain Pat Murphy fishes the Mosquito Lagoon. I'm pretty sure he's listening in. And also as well as Captain Mark Wright. And those two gentlemen I know for a fact have been pushed up on before. I know that Mark Wright gets it all the time. And just purely by people knowing who he is. You know, you get a couple of people out there fishing and they're paddling around or they're in a boat and they're having a tough day of it. And they look over and, oh, there's Captain Mark, you know, big old Exude sticker on the side of his boat. Let's go follow him around. He knows where the fish are. And it's just it kind of really makes for a tough day. It makes for a tough day because we're out there to relax and kind of, you know, enjoy the atmosphere and enjoy the day and not get frustrated. But, you know, whatever. So, anyhow, so we moved from that spot and from the flat where all the fish were at, and we moved over to another location, and the wind had died off. It got just miserably hot, and Dee had pointed us over in a direction of another island where there was another flat that stuck out in front of it. Oh, wait, hold on. No, that didn't happen yet. We went over into the cove, right, Dee?
Yeah, we went all the way into the mangroves, which was at least a half mile away from these people.
Mm-hmm. And then here comes the fleet.
They drifted. They took the wind. They fished it for like, I don't know, 15 minutes, a half hour. And Scott had hooked up on something. I don't remember what. You hooked up on a trout and I think a jack or something. Those mangroves were holding.
I caught a big ladyfish, yeah.
Yeah, they were holding some pretty nice fish, not what we wanted. And here they come drifting, all the way from the other side, on top of us again.
Yeah.
So we leapfrog.
Yeah. So this time it was awesome, because by now it's done. Like, I'm over the tournament. I'm convinced I'm not going to catch a quality fish. It's fine. I'm cool with it. I told Dee, I said, she's like, I'm really sorry about this. I didn't expect this. And I told her, I said, being out on the water with good friends, you know, good people, enjoying yourself is what it's all about. You know, having a great day doesn't always mean catching quality fish. Having a great day is enjoying the atmosphere, enjoying where you're at, enjoying the people that you're with. So we move around the corner, and I had a couple of really good strikes by this one down tree, and I just couldn't button whatever it was up, you know, on a couple of times where he hit. And I was fishing a Reaction Innovations 5-inch paddle tail. And for those of you that don't know what they are, look them up, reactioninnovation.com, I think, maybe. They're bass bait, but they've been crossed over into saltwater use. They're great baits. I was using a pearl-colored one. They actually call it white trash, which I thought was kind of funny. And it's a great bait to kind of mimic the mullet that are in the river this time of year. So anyhow, we're moving along, and Dee casts up into the mangroves with, I believe, a dead mullet, wasn't it?
Yeah, completely dead.
Yeah. And I look over at Dee, and she's hooked up, and this fish is owning Dee. Like... Yeah, exactly. The fish is screaming drag, and I thought that Dee was going to get pulled into the mangrove trees, but luckily the fish made it to the mangrove trees first and broke her off, and she didn't have to get tangled up in the trees and such. It was a big, big snook, just a monster of a snook. I know it was, because I've seen Dee catch some pretty big fish, and I've never seen her get handled like that before. So Anyhow, this is where it gets really, really funny, though. This is where, like, the lighter side of the story comes in. Now, it's not so much the angry Chuck as it is now the I'm laughing at these people Chuck. D breaks the fish off, right? We tell the people, she broke it off. We move down and around, right, away from the spot where she just broke this big fish off. And they start casting right up in that spot. And I hear the one guy go, maybe he's still in there. And I'm like, really? I'm like, really? Like, this snook probably has 5 foot of line hanging out of his face, a hook God only knows where, in his mouth and his throat somewhere, because he ate a dead mullet, so who knows how far down he got it before he come tight. And you really think, honestly, that fish is going to eat again? You know? And he just battled his way into the mangroves on a pretty stiff drag to break D off. So it wasn't like he just grabbed it and spit it, and then you can throw it back in there like a bass and maybe get him again, and he didn't feel the barb. No, this fish knew that he was hooked, and you know, it was one of those moments where you just had to move away, keep on moving, and find something else to do. So we leave that spot, and we go, another 500 yards away from there? And
yeah, there was one more really, really good spot. Actually, the location where that redfish was caught, that 50-incher I had, and got chewed by the bull shark.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we moved from one spot to the next, and we get there, and my buddy Scott takes off, and he's doing his thing up around the trees, catching little flounders and whatnot. And up until this point, I'd caught some fish. All right? I hadn't said anything about what I caught because it's not really that important with the story. Caught a bunch of trout and one small redfish, a couple ladyfish. But anyway, I'm thinking to myself, please, please, if these people come over here again, please, one of us hook something, just something solid, right? Because it's just one of those in-your-face moments where it's like, come on, follow us. We'll show you how to do this. And sure enough, D gets set up on anchor, and I'm just kind of drifting around like an idiot with my bait just dragging across the bottom trying to catch a flounder, sea robin,
catfish.
Yeah,
but you saw that giant redfish there.
Yeah, I did.
This is why I was casting.
Yeah, I did see a redfish. I spooked one as I was kind of drifting across the flat. The water was a little bit dirty at this time, so I saw, when I spooked him, I seen his tail kind of, you know, swirl around and take off. So Dee's casting with a shrimp, I believe. And shortly after that, here comes a couple of the people that were with the group. And the one guy anchors, 20, 30 yards from you?
Yeah.
Maybe. I'll give him 30, being nice. And Dee proceeds to hook a snook on a shrimp in the middle of this flat. And you can just see, like, the disappointment in the dude's face, because it was like, damn it. And it was a nice snook. It was 27 and 3/4 inches, I believe, wasn't it? 27 and something.
Yeah.
It was pretty close to 3/4.
It was like right there, almost keeper, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, a couple pictures later, Dee released it. And then you hear the people off in the distance. Oh, we got to go. If we don't go, we're going to get disqualified from the tournament. And Dee had asked them earlier, you guys are in the tournament? And they're like, yeah, we're all in the tournament. And I'm just like, wow. You know? It's even worse when it's people that you're competing against that are doing this to you. And it's just like, come on. So, real quick, I got a couple callers on the line. I'm going to get to you guys all in a second. Please keep hanging on. I appreciate you guys calling in. But let me just real quick go over the checklist of things not to do and then the things to do if you should so happen to find yourself in this situation where you launch and you're going to a spot, you've been dreaming about this spot for days and days and days, and there's somebody already there. Okay. The first thing that you don't do is you don't make a lot of noise. Keep your mouth shut, all right? Nothing goes on at 6 o'clock in the morning that's that exciting that you need to yell to your buddy, right? So just keep your mouth quiet and figure out another way to get past the individual who's in front of you in kayaks, all right? It's kind of a tougher deal for us kayakers than it is with the guys in the boats. You can just crank your motor up, turn the boat around, and go in a different direction, run off at 45 miles an hour. We got to paddle around these people. So Next thing to do, if you should happen to see a school of fish, it's not rude to ask if you can join in. You know, just, hey, psst, you know, one of them, or if the guy looks over towards you, you just kind of wave to him, hey, do you mind if I scoot in here with you? And, you know, most of the time if I'm on the water and someone does that to me, they ask if they can join where I'm fishing or whatever, I've got no problem at all with it. I'm more than happy for them to join me because it shows that there's that common courtesy thing going on. And, you know, there might be a day that comes where I can't find the fish and I might need that guy's help. So, you know, keep that in mind. Another thing not to do is obviously if you've got an anchor system or you got a stakeout pole, don't slam it in the ground real hard or drop your anchor over the side. Just lay your anchor in the water nice and soft. Try and be stealthy. Try and be quiet. You know, just again, common sense things. It's nothing that's out of the ordinary, I wouldn't think. Things that you should definitely do is check your area before you launch. A lot of times in the morning you can get to a spot and you can look down, you know, either north or south or whichever way your body of water lays and kind of figure out, okay, well, listen, we've got some guys down here already down to the south of us. Why don't we head up here to the north? Or why don't we go down to the next launch area and launch ahead of them so that we're up front of them and they're basically behind us. That's fine too. And in the south end of Mosquito Lagoon, there's a couple different launch places that are underutilized by folks that I think that they just don't realize you can launch there or what have you. But there's a bunch of different, you know, tips and kind of tricks that you can use to show a little bit of common courtesy on the waterway. I think that everybody kind of expects it, but when it comes time for you to kind of give it, it's not always a given. It's not always the thing that happens. You know what I'm saying? So, I don't know. It was fun. I had a good day. I mean, I caught a bunch of fish. Like I said, D caught a bunch of fish. Scott caught a bunch of fish. The sharks were just the craziest thing I think I'd ever seen. I've never seen that many sharks on the flats before. That was crazy. I really want to get back out there again with the little bit larger fly rod and try and get on some of them things out of the kayak. I think that'd be a lot of fun. But you know, that's pretty much my rant and rave about that situation. I just think that that, you know, it's unfortunate that it had to happen. With kids being there, I got so aggravated so fast that I knew that I shouldn't even open up my mouth. Because I'm not one to have a filter when I get really angry. So I did what I thought was the more respectful thing and just try and stay away from them as much as possible. But have you ever had any situations like that? Let's ask Mr. Becker. Greg Becker, have you ever had any situations like that?
Well, yeah, I handled them a little bit differently, but we discussed that offline earlier. Yeah, I had it happen. Used to have it a bunch of times happen when if I was guiding in a stream with up in New York for trout or something like that, have somebody come splashing in. I've actually had people walk, you know, we'd start fishing at the bank and then move out into the current and had people come wading down the stream or wading in from the other side right out into the middle of the current and start casting where we were. My favorite thing to do at that point was start dropping flies right at their feet and catching fish behind them. That would usually irritate them enough that they'd move on down the road a little bit.
Yeah. See, I don't know, man. I just don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. They got 321-302. Who do I have on the line?
302. Yeah. Captain Mark Wright.
Captain Mark, how are you, sir?
Hey, I heard my name. I thought I'd call.
Got to name drop you, buddy. Got to name drop you.
Yeah, thank you.
no problem whatsoever. Hey, I know for a fact you've had this happen to you a bunch of times.
All too often, but it's part of the game, I reckon.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, it's gotten to be that way. It's almost to be expected. In the areas that you frequent, especially up there in the north end of the river and the Mosquito Lagoon, it's like, you know, and it's funny because the guys that are doing it, if you were to flip around and do it on them, they would just be so angry. And I've had it happen to me up there. In the wintertime especially, I'll fish down just south of Biolab, and it just seems like every time I'm there, you know, if I find a small wad of fish and I get hooked up, then I don't know how people know. I really don't have any clue how people know. But
well, if you figure it out, let me know, because I haven't figured out what they're seeing at, you know, half a mile away or more, but they come running quickly.
Yeah, it's tough. It's definitely, I don't know, man, it's frustrating. It'll ruin a day for you pretty quick. You know, it just, like I said earlier, you work so hard to find these fish, and when you finally get on them and they're feeding to binoculars, it's exactly what it is, probably. I mean, I don't carry binoculars with me, Bill. That's going on in the chat room. Bill said binoculars. Yeah, but whatever. I just think it's really sad, honestly.
Well, I want to add, the last tournament I was in, there was absolutely nobody around me at all, and I'm just standing there in the kayak, and I'm fishing for these 40, 45 inches that are swimming under me. And, you know, I see them, and I'm in, like, an area that nobody as a boater would even look for fish. And these boats come flying by as if I don't even exist and plow right through three schools of at least three to four of these giant redfish. No consideration at all, have no idea these fish are there, and they still go ahead and do that kind of thing. So I don't think it has anything to do with, you know, that they recognize you. I think they just have no etiquette at all, no respect. They just want to do what they want to do. They got their mind on going where they want to go, and screw you.
Well,
you know? I mean, they'll drive right by you and practically flip you over with their wakes.
Yeah. You know what? I'm gonna go on the flip side of that and say that I actually think that it has a lot to do with certain individuals. Excuse me, certain individuals that fish the north end of the river, Captain Mark being one of them, are more recognizable than others. And the boats are recognizable. People know who you are. If you write articles on catching fish and people know that you're, you know, one of the better guides in that area, then you do tend to kind of have to worry about those that want to follow you around and try and, you know, fish off your spots. It's no different than being out in the open ocean. Okay, and this is that's even more crazy than fishing on the flats and getting run up on. You're talking about you're in the middle of the ocean fishing on a little tiny rock, and here comes a boat, and the boat will literally pull right up next to you. You can throw a rock and hit their boat to fish on the same small little piece of patch reef as you, when there's hundreds of millions of square miles of ocean to fish, and you're the only one by radar within 15 miles of that spot. But they do it, and they do it. And a lot of anglers do it to those that they know catch fish on a consistent basis. And honest to God, it's really, really sad, because I can't understand how fishing is that difficult. First of all, red fishing is not that difficult. Okay, I've gone on record a million times, even though it's one of my favorite fish to catch. They're glorified spot tail catfish. Okay. They'll eat anything you throw at them most of the time, all right? You take a hunk of ladyfish and hurl it out in front of a school of breeders, and one of them out of the 50 is bound to pick it up, all right? If they don't do that, and throw mullet at them. They're not going to eat the mullet. Use a big shrimp. I mean, come on, a quartered crab. It's like five baits that you can throw at a redfish, and they're going to eat it, all right? So that's not the hard part. Finding them is really not the hard part either. These are all fish of habit. You know, where Captain Mark is fishing, he's catching these fish at the same location at the same time of year, every single year. He knows their routine. He knows their pattern because he's on the water and he's doing it. You know, Dee, you're the same way. You fish down south. You fish for redfish and trout and snook. You knew there's snook sitting on that flat where you caught that snook. Why? Because you
absolutely
caught them.
Absolutely. I pre-fished it, and I saw all of the trout sitting in those holes right when our first spot. And I've caught multitude of snook on that corner. Not that we were looking for a snook, but I got you on some trout. But the bigger ones, they already spooked way off. I mean, they were all gone. What are you supposed to do?
Yeah, I don't
and
know.
And I said, remember we were on that first corner. I said, you know what, let's not worry too much about these guys plowing out on top of us at that first spot. We'll come back to it later. And we came back to it later, and we caught fish right there or hooked up.
Right.
And then it came plowing right on top of us again. So it's kind of like you knew where they all were, but they, the army, came and plowed you over. What are you supposed to, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have used army, but it was just a giant group of kids, you know?
Yeah, circus. But, you know, it is what it is. I guess you're right, Captain Mark. I guess we're just going to have to learn to kind of deal with it. Unfortunately, it's one of those things that's going to happen. And I don't know.
It just seems so odd that every single spot we went to, they were there. It is a giant river, and there's many locations and different islands and everything where you're at, but they were there every time.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. What are you going to do? You know, I don't know, if people need to follow you around to find fish, I guess it makes you look good. Yeah. Take it as a compliment. Makes you look good that, I mean, they needed to find fish. The funny thing is when they go home and they sit on their computers and they go on floridasportsman.com or yakangler.com or any of those websites with forums or Orlando Kayak Fishing Club or whatever, they never mention, so I followed D. Kaminsky around the flats today, and I was able to finally land some fish. Or I followed Captain Mark Wright around on the flats today, and I was finally able, you know, you never see that. All you see is, wow, we ran to the spot, and there was tons of fish there, and they were busting baits, and this is what we caught. You know? We had a great day. We caught two fish.
Don't forget, Chuck, they're also going to put a photo there that has a recognizable background to it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Hey, make sure in the background you get the big golf ball, or make sure you get
exactly.
The Holliver Canal rocks, or you know, it's, oh my gosh, man, I just don't get it. It's crazy. But you know, again, it is what it is. I got some other callers. Let's see who else I got on the line. Another 321 number is 321, and your first three is 278.
Well, how about that? That's Captain Pat.
There we go. What's going on, Captain Pat?
I don't know. I heard my name somewhere on this radio, too.
Hey, I give love to those that are in my area, man.
What's happening?
I'm not a whole lot, dear. You know, Chuck, you know, I'm going to give you a different twist on your story. I feel for you a little bit, and I'll share something with you. You know, if you went in and caught a couple of fish and left, you probably wouldn't have that problem. You know, and you say, well, gee, who am I to tell you you'd have to leave the fish? But, you know, there's absolutely no reason for you to sit there and catch 20 of these fish. You know, if you got over, caught you a couple of fish and moved on, that would be a great thing. If you wanted to sit there, that would be another thing. However, here's where your problem generally starts, and from what I see on the water. You've got two or three guys in a kayak fishing together. They look like they're in a nice, happy group. The majority of the anglers on the water, once they see this, they automatically assume that there's fish where they are. So they're going to come over and investigate as much as they will. You know, ideally, they'd get in the right position, you know, and intercept the fish if that's the case. Me being a guy that just, you know, doesn't particularly care to catch more than one or two fish out of a group, I can't relate to fishing a group of fish all day. It just makes no sense to me. But I'm a little different. You know, you guys post a wealth of information. I mean, just so much information. And your spots are not secret spots. These fish are in the same place every year, all year round. And the more prominent they become, as in like right now when they're just, you know, really wadded up and spawning, and everybody has nice, big, beautiful pictures of them, you know, your areas are only going to get more and more and more crowded. Unfortunately, you being in a kayak, you can't move and cover a whole lot of water at, you know, vast amounts of time. I can relate to what you're saying. You know, if I make up my mind I want to go fish somewhere, you know, I'm going there. Whether you're there or not, I'm coming. You know, it's, you know, I may, you know, may or may not, odds are I probably won't fish around you, but, you know, I generally wait until you got out of the way. And if you took too long to get out of the way, I'd probably go somewhere else. But I think, you know, when you put a crowd together, whether you guys are all friends or whatever, it tends to draw what I call the freshwater mentality of fishing, because that's what they do. When they see the fish, everybody piles up, and it's, hey, let's have a blast.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, I mean, this is the only reason I really even had an issue with these individuals at all.
And the area you fished in this tournament, I fished 2 weeks ago with one of the local guys down there, and we fished it in the middle of the week, and there was 7 or 8 people that basically came in and did the same thing there. So that area, from the last 2 times I fished there, it's a pretty popular area.
Yeah, no, I get that. And that's all well and good. And again, I'm not knocking these people down for fishing where they want to go fish. That's fine. But the weird thing about the whole day is not the fact that they were fishing from here, from point A to point B, is that when we would move from point A to point B, they would move from point A to point B. And when we moved from that spot to another spot, they followed us to the next spot. When we moved to the next spot, they followed us to the next spot. And we weren't in any one location for any length of time. If I fished a spot for 20 minutes, you need 20 minutes. I don't care who you are. You need 20 minutes to figure out what's going on in that spot. And at least 20 minutes to work it over with topwaters or with spoons or with plastics or with a popping cork and a mullet or a pigfish. And, you know, we did that. We gave ourselves just enough time to see if the bite was on. And if the bite was on, I tried to catch a big fish. And in a tournament situation, I'm not leaving fish to go find fish. If I'm fishing for a big trout and a big redfish, and I know there's big trout, and I know there's big redfish in this spot, and they're feeding because I can see them feeding, then I don't care who you are. I'm anchoring up, and I'm going to sit here, and I'm going to catch 50 trout if it takes it to catch one that's big enough for me to take a picture of and bring in for the tournament. That's a tournament situation. In the real-world situation, I don't beat up on a school of fish all day long. I used the term earlier, surround and pound, and I don't like to surround and pound, okay? I'll do that on occasion when I've paddled 4 miles in one direction. Say I did the circle around the south end of the lagoon, and I got up around Cucumber, and look, I found some fish. I've just paddled 4 miles to finally find some fish. I'm going to follow those fish until I get my fill of what I think is acceptable for my day and then go home. And that's kind of where I stand on that. And and I agree with you. If I'm in a spot and I'm sitting there for a while and there's fish there and somebody comes in to intercept the school as it moves down the bank, that's great. And I've done it a ton of times. I've done it with Troy Perez, and I've done it with a couple other guys down there at the south end down around Whaletail, where we'll get on those breeders and I'll hook one and the pack will move, and then Troy will hook one, and then they'll come back to me, and then I'll hook another one, and then they'll bounce back to him, and I'll catch maybe 1, 2, usually lose 1 or 2 both side because it's tough to deal with those big fish out of the kayak. And then I pick up and I go on and look for slot fish, or go on and look for little rats on fly or whatever it is that I'm going to do for the rest of the day. So no, I definitely understand what you're saying as well. And for sure, I think that the guides, are more victim to this than anybody, because you guys are on the water more often than we are. And I see it, you know, I hear about it too from guys that are coming into the shop. Guys that frequent our bait shop will come in and be like, man, you know, we're fishing this spot just, you know, north of such and such. And dude, we got run up on by 4 boats, and the school spooked, and they all took off in different directions, and there was no way for us to fish it. And, you know, it kind of ruined our day because we worked all day long to find those fish. So you're definitely always going to have 2 sides, I think, to the argument of, well, you know,
you're
I kind of
right.
get it. Go ahead.
Unfortunately, you know, the area you're fishing up here is entirely too small.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, I mean, it's you know, it's 3 miles at best at the widest point, and, you know, you don't have any more than 7 or 8 miles to go north or south for the most part. So you take that on the weekend and stick 150 boats on them, I mean, it's...
Yeah, you run out
of
room.
It's ridiculous. You run out of room. And, you know, like I said, you know, you've got to look at, you know, the miseducation or the uneducation of the people that don't know any better. And these people are not listening to your radio show, by the way.
Yeah, I know that.
You know, so, I mean, that, you know, that, in essence, you know, doesn't really help them that much. You know, it's kind of hard to say. I, you know, a couple of years back, I, you know, I would have a problem seeing the kayaks. And I remember writing on a forum a few years back, you guys needed to put some flags on your things or something, you know, because if, you know, if I'm running, you know, in low light situations and you turn the wrong way, you know, before you know it, I'm, you know, I'm right there on top of you and I don't see you.
Right.
You know, I mean, I've never intentionally ran anyone over, but, you know, I've not seen a few of you guys just based on some of those green kayaks just blend right in and the gray ones do.
Yeah.
You know, the loud orange ones, you can see it pretty good, but, you know, the other ones, you know, in low light, you know, it's kind of tough. But, you know, I can understand, you know, from your standpoint, you know, being that low to the water, it's really hard, you know, for you to guys to actually see the fish, whereas, you know, I can actually see them because I have a higher vantage point.
Right.
But, you know, to really be honest with you, majority of the fish are caught in the same places 99% of the time. So, you know, it's not like you need to cover that much water.
Yeah, no, I know that. And, you know, I've caught enough fish there in the South End Lagoon to know that, listen, I can launch. I've done it a million times. Launched at BioLab boat ramp. Gone just on the other side of the sandbar, right there next to the boat, right there next to your channel that you guys run out of, and caught a handful of redfish right there in the beginning of the morning, not even leaving that first little trough area. And, you know, the fish are there. But there's days where I do like to travel. I do like to paddle further away than most folks do because I want to get away from the typical boat traffic, hustle and bustle, whatever. And, you know, in the wintertime, it's easier to do that because the water's lower and guys in boats can't get to some of those spots that we can get to. And sometimes the fish are there, sometimes they're not. But, you know, it's all in I guess it's all just in the way that you look at it. And, you know, we all have different fishing techniques that we like to use and different ways we like to do things. And I guess that's one of the things that makes the sport great. But when you're fishing, when you're in a tournament situation, I just don't think that was done in good taste, you know. And that's really the problem. If they were out fishing and having a good time for the day and they're just out there to enjoy the day, that's fine. But if you're competing against the people that you're following around, then I've got an issue with that. And, you know, I talked to...
Were there not any ways for you to protest that? Did you guys not have any rules with fishing, you know, within so many feet of each other? Typically, you know, in the redfish tournaments, that you have to be so far away from each other. But then again, like I said, if you've got three people in your group that are fishing basically side by side, that's kind of an invite for the rest of the people to say, hey, you know, let's go over there and see what they're doing. You know, they look like they're happy. You know,
yeah.
And they get over, and I mean, you have to look at it from their standpoint. I'm not defending them by any means.
Right.
But you know, if I was in a kayak, you know, and there's ungodly amounts of water out there, and all you guys were huddled up in one area, you know, just to be sociable, hell, I'd probably come by and say hi.
Right.
You know, and if I had my kids, you know, I'd probably, you know, join in on the fun, as you say.
Right.
You know, again, it's just a matter of how you look at it. You know, if you were alone, you know, that would be a different story. But,
right.
You know, with three or four kayaks out there, it kind of looks like, you know, they have no idea of knowing if you guys are friends or if, you know, they are three different people. You know, they don't know this.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, for one, you know, me being an outspoken person, I probably wouldn't have had a problem in the first place because I would have solved it as soon as it happened.
Right.
But, you know, you just, you know, it's just one of them things you got to deal with in the overcrowdedness of the water.
Yeah,
it's funny, all you guys were fishing in that particular area. Though I was talking to somebody, and the fish that won that tournament came up out of Eddy Creek, from what I understand.
Well, the big redfish came out of the Nemoder Zone, and
did it?
Yeah, the big red first place redfish came out of Nemoder Zone, and so did the second place redfish. It was two gentlemen from over in the St. Pete area that were just chunking bait and sitting back and playing on their iPhones. Good
really?
Friends of mine. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it is...
Wow.
It's one of those things. It's honestly, it's only the second kayak fishing tournament that I've ever fished. I normally don't even like to fish tournaments just for the same reason. I don't like to get aggravated when I'm fishing, and I don't like the unneeded pressure of fishing. But I was invited to fish the tournament. I didn't pay for the entry fee. It was paid for me. So it was, you know, basically for me, a fun day's worth of fishing that, for whatever reason, just got underneath my skin a little bit, I guess rubbed me the wrong way. And again, Pat, I understand exactly what you're saying. And I agree with you 110% that fishing in the areas that we fish and being in the numbers that we're in down there. I mean, we as kayakers have basically invaded the Mosquito Lagoon like cockroaches, and it's made it tough for ourselves. It's made it tough for us. It's made it tough for you guys. And, you know, but the beauty of kind of what we do is that there are times of the year where it kind of benefits us to have those plastic boats and be able to do the things that we do. I stand most of the time when I'm in my kayak. I don't sit down very often. I stand and push pull my kayak across the flats so that I get a little bit more visual than the next guy. But, you know, like I say, it's, I don't know. It was just one of those things. I could have protested it, but at the same time, I had nothing to go back to the weigh-in for. I had an 18-inch trout. You know, I lost a big trout, a 20-plus inch trout, probably closer to 25, next to the kayak, and I had nothing really to go back to the weigh-in for. I'm not going to go post up an 18-inch fish. I just didn't feel that I was going to do it. I don't know what third place came in as. First place trout ended up only being 22 inches. But
wouldn't your protest bring light to what happened? And you as a group of kayakers, which I would assume this, you know, your tournament is a group of, you know, supposedly happy people that get along real well. Wouldn't it have been better for you to bring that to light to them so that issue could have been addressed?
I believe that issue had been brought to light to this particular group prior to this tournament, on previous tournaments, and nothing.
Okay. This
nothing
wasn't their first time.
Right. Nothing was done then, and nothing, you know, I didn't feel anything would be done now. Plus, the fact that there was children involved, I didn't want to ruin the kids' days because of the actions or whatever of the parents. You know what I'm saying? I've got kids.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
You know, I got kids myself, and if my son was in a tournament with me and somebody was mad at something that I did and felt that they needed to take it out on me by protesting something and ruin my child's day, and he would have had a winning fish and didn't get it because of this guy, I'd be pissed. And I would take it as kind of a personal issue, you know. And I just didn't want to do that. It was worth talking about for the show to kind of bring light to the situation that we all deal with every single time we're on the water. But it wasn't worth it to go at them on that level. You know what I'm saying? So
I got it. You just wanted to get your rant off.
There you go. That's it. This is my platform. I'm on my soapbox, damn it. And if I want to talk about it, I will.
not a problem, buddy. Show sounds great, Jensen. Sounds real good.
Oh, you know what, man? We had I had a good day fishing. It was a lot of fun. I used to fish Sebastian a lot as a kid, not down the flats or anything like that, just standing on the rocks or fishing on the jetty or what have you. And, you know, to see it from that different perspective and to kind of – get to know the lay of the land a little bit more and see kind of the creatures that interact down there that are so different than what we deal with up here all the time. It was really cool.
Did you see the shark?
Oh, my God. Yeah. There's sharks everywhere.
They were awesome, weren't they?
Oh, it was the coolest part of the day. I literally pulled – you'd have laughed at me. I was standing up. I was like a little kid at Disney World. I was standing up in my kayak and I'm push-pulling trying to follow the stupid sharks around just to watch them swim around and stuff, you know. But
I'm going to go get some on fly.
That's what I was just talking about earlier. I guess right before you had called in, I was telling Dee that I want to go back down there again and try and get some on a fly because they were just everywhere. Everywhere you look, there's
they're huge. Well, I had them track flies the other week when I was down there. I didn't get any hookups, but of course I didn't put any stinky smell on the fly either. I think if I would have put some smell on it, they may have, you know, taken it or done something. But everyone I cast at tracked the fly for right to the boat. So,
yeah.
I mean, they're very curious, and I think it can be done.
Yeah, I definitely want to try and do it. It's something that's on my to-do list now. But lately, I've been as my other listeners know, lately I've been ditch fishing, looking for tarpon. So that's been fun, and been able to pick up a couple of those on fly, and that's been a lot of fun. More so the adventure part of it, trying to find a new place to go, and you know, thinking about this majestic animal being the tarpon in a ditch, you know, with like, look, there's a tire. Oh, look, the tarpon just rolled. You know, it's the craziest thing I've ever seen. But you know what? I'm gonna leave that dead horse alone. Stop beating it with a baseball bat, and we're gonna move on to talking about these ditch tarpon a little bit, real quick. We have a problem that's brewing over here in Merritt Island, and I think you'll take some interest to this, Pat. There's I heard through the grapevine that Pine Island Road, they're thinking of putting a dam up down there towards the end of Pine Island Road, or a gate, so that the water doesn't, so that the water doesn't come and go like it has for years and years and years and years. The problem that I have with this is obviously, on the environmental side of things, that the tarpon that I'm seeing and the tarpon that I know other fly fishermen are catching in and around the waters that come off of Pine Island, which, if you don't know, the waters that come off of the barge, it come out of the barge canal culvert pipes just north of State Road 3, are the same waters that come through Pine Island. That's all connected by long ditches and creeks and everything else. Some of those tarpon are as small as 3 to 4 inches. Little tiny baby tarpon and little tiny baby snook live in these ditches. And I'm trying to figure out in my head, and maybe you can shed some light on this, because I'm not a marine biologist by any stretch of the imagination, but I've always thought tarpon bred offshore and spawned offshore, and that was always what I had heard, read, was told. Now, if that's the case, then how are these little 3-inch tarpon making their ways into the middle of Merritt Island in these little ditches? So something's going on here where this might be the nursery, if you will, for a lot of these tarpon that we're seeing up and down the river, from, say, Titusville south, because nothing keeps them from swimming out of the Pine Island area, you know, and nothing keeps them from swimming the ditches all the way down through and out into the barge canal, which is where I typically tarpon fish on fly, or tarpon fish regardless. So, you know, by damming up the end of Pine Island, my concern is that we're going to now put at risk this entire nursery stock of fish. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, the majority of the fish you have that are coming out of there, and even those that are, you have a group of resident fish that live in Grand Canal.
Right.
Those fish are there year round. So they're definitely breeding in there, in that area, I do know for a fact. And they're breeding in the majority of the residential areas around Merritt Island from Kelly Park south. There's quite a few 12 to 15 to possibly even 25-foot dredged out areas in some of the back of those residential areas that you can go in and find these fish in year-round as well. So they're breeding on both sides of that ditch. The bigger fish, you know, I would have to say that the smaller fish you're getting on the other side of the ditch are the fish, the babies that are migrating and just trying to find somewhere else to go for the lack of abundance of food.
Right.
It's gonna restrict it to some extent, but it's either you're gonna have to fish on one side of the ditch or the other.
Yeah.
I can't begin to tell you what the marine biologists and what the other fancy people think. You know, their science is about as messed up as fourth grade math, for what it's worth. It just, you know, what they do is, you know, usually based on something political or some active interest group or something. So you have to look at that, you know, to see where that's actually coming from. You know, you could have land developers in there. You know, God knows what's going on over there.
Yeah. I don't know. It's it's unfortunate, because I'm looking at it as a trend, and the trend that had started in the south end of Brevard County some 20 plus years ago, where they started damming up all these areas and putting culverts and gates on all these waterways, restricting the natural flow of things down there, which has in turn basically destroyed the river. We have a lack of filter feeders. We don't have the numbers of oysters and the numbers of clams and such that we once did. And I think that has a lot to do with the freshwater runoff and the lack of natural brackish water or what have you coming out of those different areas, Turkey Creeks and that kind of thing.
Right.
You know, it is what it is.
Did you see what they did to the Kissimmee River?
I heard they basically destroyed it, but I didn't see exactly what they did.
It's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
They straightened it out.
Yeah.
They straightened it out and ruined it.
Yeah. I just, you know what? I don't get it, man. It just doesn't make any sense. And it's not just us. It's all up and down the coast. It's everywhere you look.
It's across the nation.
Yeah, and it's not just an issue that we're having to deal with on the inshore side of things, the government making up their mind to do this or do that or whatever. We're dealing with it on the offshore side of things every day. I wonder if I'm going to have a job the next day because I work in a tackle shop that sells offshore tackle, and you can't go out and catch fish anymore. You know, it's like, okay, guess what? We're going to stop you from catching red snappers because they're quote unquote rare and endangered. So on and so forth. So it's,
well, you know, that kind of, you know, and I'll bring up another subject for you on that note. You know, last week we had meetings about the Merritt Island National Wildlife Refuge and the Canaveral National Seashore on proposed changes that they're going to make. Mark and I both attended that, and you know, I'm going to stretch out and tell you, I don't think there was 25 people that showed up for the one here in Titusville. So, you know, when I look at this from a different perspective, from anglers like, you know, yourself, for example, and
right.
not necessarily, you know, pointing the finger at you, but when I look at this from, you know, anglers that, you know, complain, you know, about changes and things that are going on, and they don't come out to show the support or, you know, voice their opinions on what's being taken or being proposed, then, you know, you can only accept what happens.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree 100%.
You know, the same thing happened with the guys with the red snapper offshore. You know, this has been coming down the pipe for years.
Yep.
You know, it just didn't happen all of a sudden. You know, and the response from your offshore guys were, well, I'm working that day. You know, I can't get off that day. Well, you know what? I've got a $150,000 boat sitting in my driveway. And if I can't call in sick one day to go down there and voice my opinion, then you know what? Maybe I don't need that $150,000 boat.
Very good point. I personally attended all of those meetings, and I didn't make it to your Titusville meeting here at the library because I was actually getting ready for my show that airs on Monday nights. So I didn't have a fill-in for my show, so I kind of had to do what I was doing, and I am sorry that I missed that meeting. And I know the response from the recreational angler, and again, that's not just a Florida thing. That happens up there in Kayak Kevin's territory. Up there in Virginia Beach and up in Hammerhead's area there. He's up in the New England area. It's like we all sit back and we hubbub about, wow, man, they're doing this, and man, they're taking away that. But when it really comes down to it, like you say, 20, 30 people show up at a meeting to try and protect what you want to protect when really...
And that was a large... I was exaggerating with 20 or 30.
Yeah. Oh, I heard
I
it was only like 10 or 15 people.
It that was probably closer to being more correct, you know. And of those 15 people, I think five of us were guides.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's exactly the numbers I heard. I heard it was like 10 recreational and five guides.
Pretty much it. And you know, I don't know what showed up at the New Smyrna because they had one on Tuesday as well, the next day. But you know. Again, you know, you can still, you know, if you need that information, I can get you that information, and you can forward that along to, you know, your readers or whatever have you. That's all online and available at the National Park website.
Yeah.
And you can still have time. I think it's till the end of October, if I'm not mistaken, that you can go online and, you know, do a reply or response, add your comments or whatever have you, and as well as visualize all the proposals that they have in store.
Cool. Well, yeah, I would definitely appreciate it if like you say, it's available. I can find it. But I appreciate that heads up for sure. And appreciate you weighing in on the situation. Rob, are you still there, buddy?
Yeah, I'm here.
Do you guys have any kind of environmental changes coming down the pike for you guys over in Clearwater that you know of?
Not that I've seen that I can, that's notable. I mean, not anything that would have affect me really that I can think of.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at the FWC page this week though, so you know, there might be something.
Right, yeah, there's, they definitely change things on a weekly basis. Yeah, well, you know, it, like I say, man, it is what it is. It's definitely tough to gripe about it when you're not standing there holding signs or standing there trying to do what you can to protect our rights, you know, as fishermen. And you know, I've donated money to the lawsuit, excuse me, that a recreational guys have put together and the commercial guys have put together to fight the red snapper deal. And my boss, Adrian, who owns Handler Fish and Supply, flew up to Washington, D.C. to protest with a bunch of guys that were going up there to protest for the red snapper deal. And I think it definitely opened some eyes because some changes have been made to some of the things that they were wanting to shut down. I mean, for God's sakes, they wanted to close bottom fishing top to bottom from 60 foot of water on out to 250, which would have killed us, you know, as a business, and would have killed the fishing industry as a whole in this area. You know, you can't tell somebody that you're not allowed to go drop a bait to the bottom from 60 foot to 250 and expect for that to be okay. You know, the only thing it's going to do is make people turn honest people into criminals. But, you know, so far the show, the whole hour and 17 minutes has been like one big gripe fest and kind of like a downer. And
oh,
I apologize.
Not the last 20 minutes now.
Yeah, the 20 minutes haven't been. The first hour has been. Thanks, buddy. But you know, but you know what, man, it's definitely something that I've been wanting to talk about for a while. And, you know, both issues really. And, you know, but on to bigger and better things for those that are left listening in the chat room. I want to get into a little bit about some tactics for the upcoming season. We haven't really felt the effects of fall yet. Somebody forgot to tell Mother Nature that it's supposed to be fall, and it's still piping hot outside, and the water in the rivers and in the lagoon systems looks like Yoo-hoo. And, you know, we definitely need a couple of really good cold snaps and possibly just a whole pile of rain to kind of clean that up a little bit and get rid of some of that algae that's bloomed. But, you know, what's some of your favorite, if you want to give out maybe a couple of tips, Captain Pat, what's some of your favorite fall into early winter tactics to find trout and redfish?
Fall, early winter, I tend to downsize my baits after the bait runs. The mullet passes through, which they're doing right now, and the fish tend to switch over from, you know, fin fish to crabs, crustaceans, and things of that nature. I'm a little partial to the Exude Dart, which is a 4-inch jerk bait. It has the silhouette of, say, a mud minnow and also a very small finger mullet. I don't really get into colors a whole lot because it's colors, in my opinion, are made for anglers. Fish only see silhouettes. They don't see colors. You know, fish bite on impact or impulse. They react and they bite. You know, they don't put that much thought into it.
Right.
Or they bite by smell. You know, if they're biting on something that they can smell, and that's typically in dirty water. But I'll throw the Exude 4-inch jerkbait, which is, like I said, it's called a dart. And my favorite color has to be by far, now look at her, I can't even think of it now. If Mark's still there, he'll tell you what the name of it is.
I think Mark dropped off.
Mark dropped off. It's a watermelon, watermelon with a red flake in it.
Yeah,
I want to say it's called. I don't have. I've got a bag of 1,000 of them here, but it doesn't have a name on it.
That's all right, man.
That'll throw usually rig weedless, and then after, you know, as it gets colder, I'll take that same bait and maybe cut about an inch of it off and make it smaller, because the fish tend to not really want to attack larger baits, and they want an easy prey. The trout fishing. One of the biggest keys I can tell you about trout fishing is distance in your cast, distance in your cast, cover water. If you're fishing shallow, distance in the cast. The longer the cast, the better. You know, the bigger topwater baits are generally pretty good, but I've gotten to the point in the last couple of years where I just throw the little Zara Spook, the puppy, or the Spook Junior, Super Spook Junior, the little small one.
Right.
And I like throwing it because, one, the redfish can generally get it in their mouths, and, two, you usually get a hookup on it rather than, say, a bigger bait like the skitterwalk. Like now in the middle of the summer, the late summer and fall, the skitterwalk you can't go wrong with. I mean, that's probably by far the best, the most user-friendly topwater lure I've seen as far as the lure working. The quality of the lure is not the greatest thing in the world because they don't seem to last very long.
Yeah, they don't do that, you know, for sure.
It's by far probably the most user-friendly topwater bait there is out there. The one thing you can do if you guys don't pay attention to, and, you know, in certain places, certain parts of the country, and it's like South Louisiana and general areas in the Gulf, and also on the Tampa side, you guys pay a lot of attention to the birds. And I noticed that, you know, the birds, you know, play an effect on this area. But what you have to learn how to do is learn which birds to watch. And if you notice, we've got two different types of pelicans. We've got one that's all white and one that has black tips.
Right.
Well, the ones with the black tips, you can let them go. Don't worry about them. But when you find a group of pelicans that are all white, there's always, always fish around them. They're lazy. They don't fly, and they're not going very far looking for food. They're going to be close to the school of bait, and in that time of the year, like you said, in the fall, if you find the bait, you're going to pretty much find the people that want the bait. When you find the restaurant, there's going to be people there. And that's pretty much the way I target it from that point on. Rather than getting into water temperature and, you know, water clarity, which is ridiculous now.
Right.
As it cools off, you're not going to have that problem. You know, the water will be gin clear, the grass will be dyed out, and it'll be great. But, you know, trout fishing, distance is the key.
Yep. You know, and I've got nothing to add to that, honestly. you pretty much said exactly what I've been banging on the heads of the folks reading the articles I put up on yakangler.com and listening to the radio for last year. Small bait presentation.
Well, you know, the trick is I have to produce fish.
Yeah. Well, this is true. If you don't produce fish, you don't get paid, man. I understand. You're living off that. So,
right.
You know, I just talk about fishing, brother. I've never even caught a fish. I don't know. but you know, it's I'm the same way, man. And you know what? My buddy Bill, that was just on the line, he's in the chat room. He's from over in Clearwater, I think Clearwater area, Tampa, somewhere over there on the West Coast. His favorite lure, I think, all year round, is that dart, and he loves that gold flake dart.
It's called Mangrove Red.
Mangrove Red. There you go.
Mangrove red.
I almost
that's
said
the only
mangrove
color you
red.
Need.
Yeah, I almost
yeah,
said
that's,
mangrove
that's
red.
The only
I got
color
that
you
at the
need.
Shop. Yeah, that's a great color. Scott, I know that you're pretty partial to the Exude shrimp. I know that I've fished with you a bunch of times in the wintertime, and you'll even use that Exude shrimp from time to time, won't you?
Yes, I do. I love that shrimp.
Yeah, we were actually talking the other day in the shop about the darts. And you were like, really, the darts? And I'm like, yeah, I'm telling you, man, those things are awesome. They're,
dart is the truth.
Yeah, the dart is the truth. They're great bait for a number of different applications. And like I said to you before, Scott, I've used that bait a number of times for pitching the docks and flipping under mangroves because it skips real well.
It's very aerodynamic. You can cast it a mile. You know, the shrimp is a great bait if you don't need distance.
Right.
You know, if you don't need distance, then, you know, the shrimp is an equally as good bait. But if you're looking at distance and covering water, the dart is by far the, you know, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, I just had a, yeah.
I can definitely see that. The shrimp doesn't go very far. But I can tell you what, in the wintertime, that shrimp, most redfish will not pass it up.
Yeah, it's a great bait. It's a great bait, you know. And I preach about paddle tails a lot, small, what I guess they call, Bass Assassin calls them sea shads. little 3- and 4-inch paddle tail baits rigged weedless, run through the little potholes and stuff you'll see in the wintertime, or even just thrown around the tailing fish, work real well for me too. And again, it's that smaller bait presentation. I think the water's so clean and those fish are on such kind of high alert when their tails are in the air and their faces down the grass. It doesn't create a whole lot of noise when it hits the water too. So that's one of my really go-to baits, but everything else that you had said is pretty much spot on with what I do. And, you know, it's definitely my favorite time of year to fish. I love fishing in the wintertime because I love to sight cast to fish. And there's no better time to do it than in the winter because of the water conditions. You know, I like to fish small. This year I'm going to fish a lot of small fly patterns. I've been tying a bunch of different stuff up. I'm just getting into it, Pat. So, you know, I've been fly fishing. I've been fly fishing a long time, since I was 10, but never tying flies. And I just got into it probably about a year or so ago. And I'm working on it. It's definitely a work in progress, but I've gotten some really good guys who have helped me out kind of getting jump started and stuff. Mike Batarak and some of those dudes. I know you guys all have the club that you get with, and I definitely need to make it to a couple of those events. But Harry Goods, I know you're always down there doing some fly tying classes and stuff like that. And for those of you that don't know about Harry Goods, and I don't know how you can't know about Harry Goods, those guys have been a staple down there in Melbourne for as long as I've lived here. Check them out. It's a really neat shop. It's a small family-owned business. They've got plenty of apparel, fly tying stuff, really nice higher-end fly gear and spinning stuff and offshore tackle. So, and the guys in there are really good people. So give them a shout. They're down there off of 192, right before the bridge, if you're heading towards the beach, on your right-hand side. But yeah, so that's going to be pretty much my tactics, I think, for this winter. I'm going to really try and do some more fly fishing from the kayak. Last year, I found myself wading around the kayak more than I found myself standing in it fly fishing. And I didn't really do so hot. There was a couple of times where I just got nervous, man, just being, you know, kind of, again, new at tying and using my own stuff that, I don't know, botcha cast or whatever like that. Or, you know, you're standing on the middle banks there south of Whale Tail in the Pelican Island area, and here come, you know, one of the many schools that swims through that area every day, and you know, you're waiting for them. You're expecting to see them. And when you see them, there's like 50 of them, and I don't know what to do. You go to throw a cast, and
it happens to everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
It happens to everybody.
I watched a guy one day on the nose of a Hell's Bay, and he must have almost hit that poor guy on the polling platform probably at least a dozen times trying to throw to a couple of tailing fish. That poor captain on the back of that thing kept duck bobbing and weaving and trying to like stay out of the way of the guy's line. It was funny, man. But
yeah. I have the three hook and rule out. You're done.
Yeah.
I let them hook me three times. Your third time, you're done.
That's awesome. Well, Rob, that's on the phone. That he's also a host of a kayak fishing radio show. It actually airs tomorrow night. His nickname is a bad backcast, so if that tells you anything.
All right.
Yeah, he's quite the avid fly fisherman as well. I think that he's kind of in the same boat as me, though. He doesn't get to do it as much as he'd like, but, you know, it's definitely been a lot of fun. One of my favorite things to look for in the wintertime, too, is those redfish that like to creep real close to the bank looking for fiddler crabs or small blue crabs that are trying to get warm in the sun. It's a lot of fun, man. And for those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, I have literally seen redfish with their eyes almost out of the water cruising along the bank. Like, just, you're like, how are you even breathing? It looks like your gills are out of the water, and they just cruise nice and slow right along the bank. And all of a sudden one will stop and just, you'll see like his tail kind of light up, you know, kind of like just little puff of like energy, and then he keeps on moving and stops again and then pops again. And, you know, those are fun fish to target because, when they hit something and they feel that hook set, watching them blast out of that shallow water in the mud and kick a rooster tail up is pretty entertaining. And I've got
he's one of those exude crabs on one of those, man. If that's what they're looking for, man. Awesome.
Well,
that would be a great bait for a situation like that, man.
I was getting into that. The exude crab with either Lunker sauce or Procure.
No, you don't need any sauce on that, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that, but there's some folks out there that still like to dead bait or dead stick baits, and
yeah.
I've taken those exudes and soaked them in a bag of something, and you know, left them up on a dashboard of the truck for like a week, so they're fermented and they stink like all get out.
Oh my god!
And you hurl one of them things out and roll it flat and just leave it there. And then
you made a gulp.
Basically.
You made your own gulp.
There you go. And leave it there and don't mess with it and then go to casting something else. But just the movement alone that Exude has come up with out of their crab pattern is absolutely incredible. I don't like the gulp crabs because there is no movement really. They're basically a chunk of plastic. And I like things to look relatively lively. So, you know, the exude crabs is one of those things that I fell in love with probably about 3 years ago. And it has always been my go-to bait, especially in the wintertime when they're feeding on crabs and those other crustaceans. Me and
Rob,
Scott,
are you using the fantail shrimp or just the regular?
No, I don't use it. Right now I'm using DOA curly tails. But I was talking about the exude crabs, the little round ones with like the...
Yeah.
The plastic worm, like style hook rigger on the beginning on the front end of it. Love those things, man. Those are awesome.
Okay.
Yeah. The
Exude has a different shrimp as well. It's a little lighter and it has a lot more movement to it.
Yeah, that fantail.
You were speaking of scent. It has a little pocket on it where you can actually put, say, like a fish bite or something in it.
Yeah, let me tell you how many packs of the fantail shrimp I've sold in conjunction with either a tube of Procure or BioEdge or whatever, because that little hole there in the back end can just, like he says, you can just squeeze a little bit of it in there, put a little fish bite down in there, and
you're good to go.
You are golden, and that thing has crazy movement. Scott, you've fished those before, haven't you?
The fantail shrimp?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah,
I prefer the bigger body shrimp from Exude over those.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I love those shrimp, man.
Well, you know, it's one of those. Here it goes again. Here's the conversation always comes back to, does it catch fish or does it catch fishermen? I think a lot of what's out there today is definitely designed to catch the fishermen more so than the fish. I don't really think that there's a need to have 75 colors of Berkeley Gulp or 75 colors of Bass Assassin. You know, the different styles of baits, like you use those big shrimp. I've never been a huge fan of them because I haven't really had a lot of success with them. But at the same time, you can't tell me that I should be throwing anything other than a Bass Assassin Shadtail or, as it used to be, Blurp, now that they've stopped making it. You can't tell me that I can't throw that paddle tail 365 days out of the year and not catch a redfish on it. You know what I'm saying? I could prove you wrong on that one. But then again, there's plenty of guys that will be like, that's a winter bait. You know, you got to use this or whatever. That's part of what I think makes this radio program and others, like the Saturday morning, Jim Ross's radio program he does here locally on, I think it's 1300 WMEL AM radio. And then the guys over at Fish in Florida Radio at 740 The Game. You listen to some of these different programs, and everybody has kind of like their own technique and their own way of doing things and their own favorite baits and their own thing that they always promote or always talk about, whether it's because you're sponsored by them or because you just truly believe in them or whatever. And, you know, that...
Well, I'm not sponsored by Exude for the record.
However, if Exude would like to send you a giant box full of stuff, no, I'm just saying.
No, I'm good.
Yeah.
I have more plastic than I'll ever throw the rest of my life.
I imagine so. I know Mark is been with Exude for like I think since
yeah,
the dinosaurs since the dinosaurs roamed the earth, and I talked to Mark at length a couple of times about some of their products and asking some questions because he seems to be a little bit more important than the average pro staffer to Exude. And one of my big gripes from that particular company is the cigar minnow. I'm not a fan of it. I don't like it. It's not for me, but it could be for somebody else. Apparently it is. They still sell it. I really wish they'd make a bait that would be more comparable to, say, like a DOA Cal paddle tail or a Bass Assassin style blurp kind of deal with a little bit smaller body profile and that kind of thing. Because, Scott, where me and you were fishing in the Indian River last winter out of the kayaks, where the water was so shallow, remember that?
Yeah.
And those fish were only eating little tiny minnows coming out of those small little creeks.
It was just so much fun just to watch those fish being half of their body out of the water, and they're doing their thing, have no idea that we're even around them.
Yeah, well, that was funny. Rob, I don't think I ever really got a chance to tell you about this story. Me and Scott were fishing this spot. It's one of my kind of favorite secret spots that's still relatively a secret, if you can believe that, up in the north end of the river. And it's straight mud. Like, you can't wade it. You'd sink up to your chest. But these redfish get back up in there in the wintertime, and you would not, it's like the last place you'd expect to see them. And me and Scott were fishing along this edge, and along the edge of this flat, and you can hear them. You can hear redfish busting, but you couldn't see them. You couldn't, you know.
Those in the grass.
Yeah, you're looking over towards the grass, and you're like, was that in there? You know, like, they're in the grass. And so it reminded me a lot of what you see out of the Carolinas with the flood tides and that kind of thing, where the fish are so far up in the grass that down here you wouldn't really expect to see that in this particular location. But we were able to kind of sneak up in there, and on a couple occasions I had those fish kind of nose their way around like a bend in the grass. Remember that one came around the bend of the grass and was literally tailing right next to the nose of the kayak and had no clue I was there until I tried to catch them.
No, that's awesome. You know, it was like that up in Jacksonville, you know, when we were up there. You could stand up on your kayak and look in the grass, and you could see redfish, you know, moving around, but there was no way to get a shot off on one of them, you know, without, you know, you could cast it, but have, you know, good luck getting it to land in the water, you know, with all the grass. So, that's pretty awesome.
That's one of those things. I went to the fly fisherman in Titusville. God, I'm plugging everybody today. I went to the fly fisherman up there in Titusville, and I was looking at some foam heads to make some popping flies, and some of the little foam bodies and stuff that they have there.
Gurglers.
Yeah, man. I haven't perfected the gurgler yet. I know it's an easy fly to tie, but, man, I just can't. Maybe I'm just not tying. Maybe I'm not trimming it right or something. Perhaps it's another reason why I should go to one of the classes down there, maybe ask you guys to show me, but I just can't get it to pop right, but whatever. That seems to be the ticket for the shallow water, grassy kind of area pattern. Is that something that you would throw in that kind of situation, Pat?
I would probably be more leaning toward throwing a bend back. You know, something that's, you know, a little more weedless. You know, when you have to deal with the grass, you know, you want to try to eliminate as much grass as possible. And the bend back tied in a bait fish pattern or a bait fish color or a color that's, you know, reminiscent of what the fish are feeding on, pretty much will get it done. Your biggest problem there will be to add flash or not add flash. So I would tie flies with flash and some without flash. You know, just to, you know, to see what the difference is, because sometimes, you know, the flash, the fish will turn off on them. You know, I've sat down and I tied, you know, there's probably, if you saw my desk, you probably have seen pictures of it, but, you know, I sit down and I create stuff and I go out and I throw it out and I practice on the fish. And, you know, I'll go out one day and I'll throw a fly and I'll look over and the fish just literally hammer it, you know, and I said, wow, this is great. So I'll come home and I'll tie up, you know, 24 of them, you know, and then I'll go back out again. And, you know, that same fly still works, but, you know, it's like I need to tie something else.
Yeah.
You know, and you end up tying, you know, just a different variation of something that's already been done. There's nothing really new. But in the water, and more, you know, to the point that you're speaking of, I would rather throw a bend back.
Cool.
Simply because, you know, a bend back is pretty much weedless if you put, you know, if you tie it with, you know, natural stuff like, you know, bucktail, and rather than the new the synthetic stuff doesn't tend to you know, kind of mats down and, you know, kind of defeats the purpose of the way what you're tying the fly for.
Right.
And you're basically tying that fly to be weedless itself with the pattern. One thing that I've picked up in the last couple of years in tying that pattern would be to add a couple of strips of mono in the body of the fly. And what that does is that kind of stiffens up the body itself, and it also makes it a lot more weedless. I find it even more weedless, where the material will kind of stay around the mono, and then it just stays right over the hook, so you just don't get the grass anymore.
Right.
I mean, it's almost perfect.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, no, I definitely want to learn how to tie those. I'll probably have to throw do a YouTube search real quick and see. I'm sure there's a video on there. Or some on one of the fly fishing forums, whether it be the Drake or something, where I can get a quick sample video of how to do one of those. But the fly is the fly fishing, the fly tying and fly fishing aspect of things has definitely taken over my life, and it's gotten kind of crazy here at the Levi household. I've basically commandeered two dining room tables and our bar that's in our living room for fly tying material storage, fly tying stuff. I got my kid shows up every day with a different piece of fly tying material that he's found laying around the house. Dad, I found a rabbit zonker. I'm like, ah, cool. I needed that color, you know. So it's a lot of fun, man. And if you guys are listening, whether it's to the podcast later, or if you're listening live, and you don't fly fish, and ever thought about it, definitely consider it. It's a lot of fun, man, and it can be stressful at times, but. Man, it's so rewarding when you tie something and a fish eats it. I don't think that there's any better feeling. You can convince a fish to eat a piece of plastic just fine, and you can convince them to eat a feather and bucktail combination or synthetics or whatever. But when you sit down and you actually personally tie these things, and as you were saying, kind of put your own spin on things. I've actually I need to show it to you. I tied a what I would call more of a mullet pattern. It's kind of got it's got an epoxied head, and I use a lot of marabou and stuff for movement, and it has been just an absolute killer on those ditch fish and on reds and trout as well. I'm sure snook are going to clobber it. Scott's seen it in action a couple of times. It's pretty crazy. I gave one to Rob. I don't know if you've thrown it yet or not, but I love that fly. It's awesome.
Is it like that Shimano thing?
Kind of, yeah. It's like the Shimano-ish.
Like what Aaron Adams, yeah, what Aaron Adams calls like a muddler or mangrove muddler or something like that. Yeah, yeah. I got to learn how to tie that pattern, man, because that's a killer fly, man.
You know what I have found too to be one of the best kind of all-around fly patterns that I've tied that I like the most, and I seem to keep tying them in different colors and different sizes, is just like a little toad, you know, like a little tarpon toad.
Mm-hmm.
Just that toad just seems to be such a good all-around fly. I've caught trout on it, caught redfish on it. I've had the tarpon strike it before. I've had bass eat it. So, I mean, it's that's a pretty cool fly. But real quick, I want to talk or name drop another person. This is Name Drop Central. Gary Redwine over at Boldwater Media Group with Boldwater TV. Probably one of the coolest things going. He does a it's an internet-based form of advertising for restaurants, marinas, boat manufacturers, like retail locations and things like that. He puts these players in – it's like a little internet-based player that he puts in these places with a flat-screen television, and it's a loop, 24-hour loop of nothing but fishing footage and pictures and videos, and it's all stuff that he gets from – people that just send them stuff. So Rob, when you start doing some videos, you can send him, you know, a video, and he'll take a piece of the video and use it on the thing, and you know, put a little thing after the video. Thanks, you know, Rob DeVore for the video. Contact Rob at blah blah blah, blah, or read his blog at blah 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 blah. So it's kind of a cool tool for us to use as fishermen, for those of us that like to take a bunch of pictures or video and that kind of thing. I was actually eating lunch the other day, and my favorite location that you all know of, it's the Smokehouse Foods out in Port Canaveral, which is, in my opinion, the best pulled pork sandwich that you can find in Brevard County. If you haven't tried it, stop by. They're right across from Seafood Atlantic in Port Canaveral. I'm pretty sure I can blame Wes from Smokehouse Foods for my roundness. I eat there probably 2 or 3 times a week, and I'm absolutely 100% convinced that he puts crack in his barbecue beans, because
I got some good sky videos, you know, if you want to see some.
We like birds, dude.
HD pictures of some sky, you know.
Got some seagulls. But anyway, yeah, so for if any of you guys own companies and want to get out and do some advertising and get in front of the fishing community as a whole, he's got players all up and down Florida's coast. I believe he's got them over in the Bahamas now. There's the estimated audience of his TV deal is over 1 million viewers a year. So that's pretty impressive. And it's just really cool. So next time you're in your local marina, if you're here in Florida, or your favorite bait and tackle shop, take a gander around, look for a television. Chances are you'll probably see one, and it's probably Boldwater TV. Gary's a great guy, great friend of mine. Look for the flying fish. Yeah, everybody knows the Boldwater flying fish. And if you don't, then you haven't been around fishing enough. Derek actually started that particular company and has since, I believe, moved on to the Bloody Decks guys over in California. And man, you talk about somebody that's got a lot of talent in the way of graphic design and graphic artist and building exceptional web media programs. Derek's your man for that too. So there you go, another plug. So it's plug away time. If somebody wants to hire you, Captain Pat, how do they go about contacting you? And do you have a website? And if so, what is it?
I have a website. It's called trophyredfish.com.
Trophyredfish.com. There you go.
Trophyredfish.com. And it's just about every available possible question that you could possibly have is probably available for you there. I made a new website, and I made it a little user-friendly, so it's a little more accessible for the smartphone, and all the information you need is pretty much on the front page. Tried to make it a little simpler rather than, you know, giving people, you know, 50,000 things to look at, you know, while they're trying to navigate. And you can call me anytime at 321-278-9852.
There you go. So, guys, for any of y'all listening that want to go experience the North Indian River, Mosquito Lagoon area by way of boat, get a hold of Captain Pat. He's an exceptional man and a great fisherman, and I highly recommend him. Really good guy. So I promise you won't have a bad trip. And then also, too, we had him on as a guest earlier, Captain Mark Wright at CaptainMarkWright.com. Again, same location, fishing that same area. The cool thing that some of these captains are doing up in the the north end of the river and in the lagoon is some of these guys are sharing trips. If, say, a guy calls and he's got four people to go, or he's got, you know, a larger group, some of the guides are friendly enough with each other where they can split a group or whatever and just kind of like make it work. So
we do it all the time.
Yeah, see, there you go.
Yeah, we do it all the time. Yeah, Mark and I do it quite often, believe it or not. Groups, families, you know, usually smaller groups, you know, four or six people, something like that. It's, you know, the experience is better, and we generally fish in the same areas or, you know, within you know, a certain distance, a mile or two of each other at times. But for the most part, you know, it's all about having a good time. That's the experience. You know, if you're looking to catch 1,000 fish, I'm not the guy to call.
But if you're looking to catch a trophy redfish.
If you're looking to catch a trophy redfish and you catch him and have the opportunity, my promise to you is that I'll give you the opportunity to catch your intended species. That's a guarantee. Whether you choose to do that on spin or fly, it doesn't matter to me. I'll put them in front of you.
There you go. And that's all you can do at the end of the day. It is fishing after all, folks. So, you know, there's days where you get out there and you can catch a good number of them, and there's days you get out there and it just doesn't happen. It's just the way it goes. But, yeah, so give both of those gentlemen a holler if you're in the market for a guided trip. If you're coming in from out of state, I know that I got a lot of you guys that listen all around the country and to the podcast and also the live show. So, you know, if I'm not available to take you fishing, as you know that I love to do, then get with these guys. They're the ones that I would definitely recommend to hook up with up here in the north end. But
can't wait to get my captain's license.
Yeah, Mr. Scott. Mr. Scott's going to get his captain's license here shortly. I believe you're going to focus down in the Melbourne area, though, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to be down more Banana River, South Indian.
There you go. Well, before you know it, I'll have a whole gamut of inshore guides that'll be calling the show. And, you know, that's the neat thing about what I do, what we do here at Kayak Fishing Radio, is just because it's called Kayak Fishing Radio doesn't mean the whole show has to be dedicated to strictly kayak fishing. I don't just kayak fish. I own a 26-foot center console as well. So, you know, I'm a pretty well-rounded individual, and I like to fish from boats. There's days where the boat is the only way I can get out. I'm not fishing in a kayak when it's blowing 15 knots, 20 knots. It just doesn't make sense. But I definitely appreciate you coming on, Captain Pat. It's been good to have you, and I appreciate your insight on all things that we've discussed this afternoon or this evening, and appreciate you spending your Monday night with me rather than watching football.
Hey, listen, thank you for having me. You guys have a great night.
You too, buddy.
All right.
But, we, kind of got a little bit of everything going on tonight. It's 7 minutes till my 2-hour mark, and I think I'm going to go ahead and just start wrapping it up. But you know, recapping real fast, I'm going to end up having a recap here in the next day or two, posted on yakangler.com. Again, yakangler.com is your online internet resource for all things kayak fishing related. Check them out. I know I'm killing you guys with the name drops and the product placements, but you know what? I forgot to plug my favorite people in the world, Florida Beer Company, who is my unofficial beer sponsor for the Monday Night Kickoff Show. And the Florida Lager is, I believe, their newest beer in their line. They have the Florida Lager, the Florida the Swamp Ape, Key West beer, the Tropical, the Ybor City, the Hurricane Reef. They've got a whole list. They even got one called the Indian River. So they got a whole list of beers that are, you know, that would, I'm sure something in that category or something is in your category of beers that you like to drink. Check them out. Florida Beer Company. FloridaBeer.com. Sorry. There you go. That's the last one, I promise. Except for my own site. That's Chuck's Kayak Fishing Adventures, or Chuck's Kayak Adventures. I don't even know my own website. Wow. Chuck's Kayak Adventures.com.
Lack of use.
Yeah, lack of use. Wow. Man. You know what's awesome about that is that, you know, you're sitting there editing, which you hope you'll find like 15 seconds worth of usable footage off your sky shots. That's from lack of use. So,
yes.
Yes. Oh, man. What an evening. Well, you know what, guys? I really appreciate it, as always, you guys tuning in and listening to me and giving me your Monday evenings over there in the chat room. I still have the Hammerhead. I appreciate you tuning in, staying with me, buddy. I just saw that Greg from over there, your way, the big fly reel has canceled out on me. Dee seems to be in the chat room, but I don't think she really is. Kayak Kevin, I see you there, buddy. I appreciate it. Rob, of course, Scott, sorry to leave you on hold all evening, but I was talking with Captain Pat there pretty in-depthly. But check out my website again. It's chuckskayakadventures.com. I got it right this time. And, you know, if you have any questions, please, folks, feel free to shoot me an email at, chuckskayakadventures@hotmail.com, lack of use. And, you know, check out Kayak Kevin's website. I'm sure you guys know what it is. Isn't it just kayakkevin.com or something? Kayak Kevin? Put it up quick. Hurry. Type. He's not paying attention. Rob, A Bad Backcast. You can check out his blog at abadbackcast.com. His show airs tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. I will be in Tampa. No, St. Pete for the Yankees Devil Rays game, sitting in the owner's box.
You better be calling me.
I'm not calling you. I'll call you from the game for a minute.
I'm kidding.
There it is. Yeah, it's kayakkevin.com. Check out his website. Kayak Kevin's been producing some videos from the West Virginia area. The guy's site.
West Virginia?
Oh, Virginia Beach. Whatever. Virginia. Virginia Beach area. He's been a citation winner, a master angler, I think is what they call it up there when you win a bunch of citations and stuff like that for catching fish. We don't have that here, Scott. We will hopefully someday. And, you know, but check it out. He's got a new video out. It's pretty sweet. And then I think that's it. Did I hit everybody? I think that's it. Yeah. No. The rest of the shows, dude. So Rob's got a show tomorrow night. There's no more. So you remember, there's no more 10 o'clock show on Tuesdays. It's only the Bad Badcast show on Tuesday nights now, 8 o'clock. Then Wednesday, we've got Mark Wheeler, Landing Crew. He is from Virginia Beach. Got it right that time. And his show airs at 8 o'clock Eastern, covering all things bass fishing and saltwater related up in that neck of the woods. Thursday night is our godfather himself, the tree hugger, Chip Gibson. His show is on Thursday nights at 8 o'clock. And then Friday is the Spike and Ike show. I don't know if that's what they're calling it, but I'm going to call it that. I like it. Spike and Ike show. And it's Isaac the Nothing Miller and Spiker from California. Probably the true godfather of kayaking. The guy's been doing it since like the 60s. I think there's a picture circulating of him in a tie-dye shirt where he looks pretty awesome. You know, sitting on a kayak with some kind of giant California fish. But cool. That's that. Check out yakangler.com. 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 Plug it in your heads.
Hey, real quick, Chuck. Huh. I got Pete McDonald, author of the awesome book, The Blitz, following the baitfish migration up the East Coast from Florida to Maine. So that's going to be interesting. It's an awesome book documenting that. And Tosh Brown did the photos. So
awesome.
Tune in tomorrow.
Tune in tomorrow.
Pete's
for
a great
sure.
guest.
That'll be an awesome show to tune into, guys. I just got the 90-second warning in my ear, which means I've officially gone 2 hours again. I don't know who you are, guests, but I appreciate you listening. 60 seconds left. Got to go. Thank you very much. Tune in to me next week. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. Trey and Logan, sleep, please. Daddy needs sleep. Talk to you guys later. Good night.
Good night.
7 seconds left. Thanks again, guys. Good night.